Let's get back to your hometown, Wakanda style. Stay with us, and we'll show you a village filled with small-town charm and wonderful lakeside restaurants. Sponsored by Illinois Lottery, doing good and supporting Illinois communities, and by McDonald's.
Yeah. In fact, I want to talk a little bit about that. McDonald's are, of course, all across the country and world, but they're individual stories. They're hometown stories. Nondas Plasiotis is the owner-operator of the McDonald's in Wakanda. Nondas, this is John. You're on WGN. How are you?
John, I'm doing well. Thank you.
What's the origin of that name? Where are you from, Nondas?
I'm from Chicago. The origin is of Greek.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure you are local, but that's a Greek name. So what's your history? Are you in the food business your whole life, or what brought you to owning and operating a McDonald's?
I was in the food, but you know what, before we start there, you know what's ironic? WGN has been part of our family for, 40, 50 years. I remember my father having it on the radio.
Me too.
Just going to work, and here I am on it now.
How about that? We've come full circle, haven't we?
Yes, we have. I've been in the food business for basically all my life. I selected McDonald's as an operator. It's an iconic brand. As a child, I grew up with McDonald's. Sometimes we couldn't even afford it. We were poor.
Yeah.
But it was always there. You know, they used to advertise, Ronald McDonald's is going to be here. I go, Dad, can we go? No, we can't afford it this time. I'm sorry. But it was always there. And it works the same thing as we're doing now. It worked with the communities, and it grew with the communities, and the communities grew around McDonald's also. And that's why I selected to get into McDonald's. I've been an operator for 21 years now, and still going strong, and I hope I can stay another 21 years.
I know that the culture at the restaurants is you work with McDonald's, not at McDonald's, that it's a community business, it's a partnership, you and the crew and the customers as well. And
yes.
So, like, was this the first, like, you sound like a young man, like, you graduated school, whatever, but then you start, did you work at a McDonald's before you owned one?
No, I did not. I was going to college. I wanted to become a lawyer, picked up accounting, and one day decided just to go into the business. Well, I had bought a small business so I can keep my, at least fund my college.
Yeah, right.
Or partial.
So what did you discover when you're running a restaurant then? What was surprising to you? What was fun? I mean, so now you're taking that dive. What was it like when you started running your own business?
The business is all about the people. It's about your employees, and it's about your customers. That's it. Give them the best quality of food. Give them the best service. That's all you want. That's what I expect when I go there.
Yeah.
End of story, period.
Yeah. And how hard is that? I mean, so let's just talk about your crew then. What's employee turnover like? How hard is it to get people? How hard is it to train people? What's it like behind the counter there?
Getting people was a little difficult. We're getting back on board right now with people. They're coming back out and they're getting jobs. Turnover was rough. It was rough for a while there. People just wanted a certain hours. And yeah, I understand that. But we, a lot of kids come from high school and college and they want these first time jobs.
Yeah.
But they're limited. So you got to wait. You work with them, you wait. You grow with them, they grow with you. And then suddenly they move on.
So you are, keep going.
I'm sorry?
Well, that I guess will always be a challenge, especially for somebody that's in the fast food business. People maybe will take that as a first job or a second job to get through a financial situation or maybe a summer job. But I also understand that McDonald's does have opportunities for people to grow. I don't know if there's tuition assistance and stuff like that, but what does McDonald's do for the employees?
Well, it's not McDonald's, it's the owner operators. So we do offer assistance, both college and also for second language. Second language, we pay for it, same thing with college. So we offer those assistance programs. And a lot of kids take advantage of it. And we want to do that. It's not like we're saying, No, don't. No, we want them to participate in the programs. We want them to come and work here. During the summers, they come and work full-time if they're going to school away or out of town. And I see that in a lot of kids. They go, hey, you're back again. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
They come back, and that's what we want. We want to grow with them, and we want them to grow with us if possible, if they select that route.
This all really sounds good, really. As I said when we just started, Nondas, it's not just a franchise that happens to be in town. It's a local business. I think that's what we've learned from our partnership with McDonald's. Every owner-operator is a different story, and they're very involved in the community. I sure hear that from you.
Oh, no, yeah, that we are. Anything there is. I mean, you know, we have to, at points, and I hate to say this, but it's a positive point to me.
Okay.
You know, I've sacrificed things in my family, but it's also part of the McDonald's family. My kids say, Dad, you know, you're going to work. It's Sunday. Yes, we're going to work. It's after church. I'm going back to work. I get involved with every aspect of the business. Every customer, we go in, you know, hey, guys, what's going on? Where have you been? I mean, I sit down basically with groups on a weekly basis, just talking about the community. That's all they do. That's what Wakanda's all about. I mean, Wakanda's is a very close-knit community, but it's open. Everybody knows each other, even if they're living from one side of the city to the other.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's great to be a part of.
I got to go, Nondas. We're out of time. We haven't even talked about the food. I had a McChicken sandwich today, though, and it was delicious, I want you to know.
That's great to hear. Hope to see you back.
Okay. Nondas Plesiotis is the owner-operator of the McDonald's in Wakanda. That's our hometown today. Thank you, Nondas.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Bree Fowler's the senior reporter at CNET. Bree, do we know what caused the CrowdStrike outage?
Well, according to CrowdStrike's preliminary report, basically there was a bug in an update that got uploaded to millions of machines, and it did not interact well with Windows and caused all of those machines to crash. Looks like about 8.5 million devices, according to Microsoft.
And has that been fixed? Have they sent out an update for all of those devices?
Oh, sure. They sent out an update right away. The problem is that there had to be like a manual reboot process that was incredibly tedious and time-consuming for IT teams to actually put in place. So, you know, it took some companies a lot longer than others to get back on their feet.
I guess better that it be this embarrassing snafu. I mean, this is the very sort of thing they exist to keep from happening, but perhaps better that than it was some terrorist organization or some hacker who was stealing information. It wasn't that, was it?
No, definitely not. And CrowdStrike emphasizes that, you know, the companies that use its products, that they are safe, that they are protected. CrowdStrike is a cybersecurity company. It is one of the biggest ones out there, and it is in lots and lots of computer systems.
What about the Senate hearing on legislation to protect kids from dangerous content?
Yeah, the full Senate is actually supposed to be considering this legislation this week. And then, you know, the idea is that it would hopefully be passed sometime in August. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has brought it up. And it is a bipartisan bill that does have lots of support. It's been a long time coming because it's designed to protect kids from the dangers that they may run into online, but how you go about doing that is something that, you know, everybody's still trying to figure out.
Boy, a hot topic. There's a long story, and I think The Atlantic this week about it is about sextortion. 14 to 17-year-old boys are especially vulnerable to this. They'll strike up some sort of online, they think, relationship with maybe another girl or boy, and that person on the other end is friendly and chatty, and then they want a nude picture, and enough kids comply, but once they send the nude picture, instantly they get a bounce back saying, I'm going to share this with everybody unless you give me money. That's sextortion. One kid took his life by suicide afterwards, and it's just horrifying what happens. And they trace all of this back to, I think, Nigeria is where a lot of this is coming from.
Yeah, we always used to make jokes about the Nigerian prince and phishing scams and, you know, back to the old snail mail scams back in the day. This is kind of the next evolution of that, and it has had tragic consequences.
And I guess there's, it's like all of this crap. What are you going to do, fly over there and find him? I mean, these people are invisible, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with all kinds of cybercrime, whether you're talking about credit card fraud or sextortion or, you know, ransomware attacks that take down massive corporate systems. Most of them can be tracked to, you know, these guys, these criminal gangs or just organizations that are based in countries that generally don't extradite to the United States.
Mm. So insulate your household as best you can by talking to your kids and monitoring their use and educating them. One last thing, Tesla. What's going on with Tesla right now?
Yeah, they had a bad quarter, and their stock is still reeling as a result. Their second quarter profit dropped 45% compared to a year ago. And this is despite price cuts and promotions and things like that, you know, designed to boost sales. They're just not making money. The demand for electric vehicles, you know, people wonder if it may have peaked. You know, we're trying to push these things, but they're still kind of expensive, especially, you know, before you factor in those tax breaks and things like that. But, you know, whether the infrastructure is there in a lot of parts of the country remains to be seen. And people aren't going to buy them, especially for their main vehicle, until they know that they can drive it where they want to go.
But the revenue went up, but their profits went down. Is that what happened?
Right. You know, sales went up. They really made an effort to boost sales, but it's not enough to cover costs. I mean, that's true with any kind of business. I mean, you can boost sales all you want, but, you know, if your costs keep running high, whether it's R&D or, you know, just the cost of doing business, there's really no point.
Bree Fowler, senior reporter, CNET.com. Always a pleasure, Bree. Thanks for helping us out today.
Thanks for having me.
Craig Bolanos joins us right now, the co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Invest with WMG.com is Craig's website. Hey, Craig, I'm ready to ask you a question. I'm moving the line. Are you ready?
Yeah. Is it about my backhand and my third shot drop in pickleball, or what are we talking about?
The Fed, I'm moving the line to 2. Are you over or under on rate cuts this year? The line is now at 2.
I am on 2. We are going to get 2. If you ask me to choose the over or the under, I'm actually going to choose the under because that election gets in the way. We get 1 in September. We're guaranteed to get 1 in December. That's it. Chalk it up. Put it in the books.
There's some buzz about July.
No, I'm sorry. It's not happening in July. I just saw a GDP print of 2.8% this morning, reminding me that the economy is still humming along. Now, I do think they should cut rates, but we're not getting one at this next meeting.
Talk to me about that 2.8. What's that all about?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, we measure an economy by its gross domestic product, and seasonally adjusted, we grew at 2.8% in the second quarter. You know, that's a pretty decent pace. Is it below where we've been? Sure it is. So when people ask me on the street or at a dinner party, is the economy doing well right now? I say, yeah, despite high interest rates and inflation, we've had strong jobs, strong wages, and sure, consumers aren't saving as much as they used to because stuff costs more, consumers are spending, but the rumors of an economic recession coming in 2024, they're just rumors. The soft landing remains intact.
It seems to really be happening, doesn't it, that soft landing?
Pinch me. Oh, my gosh. I'm living a fairy tale of Goldilocks. It's actually happening. We're in a very, very good spot. In fact, I would argue for investors, this has been an absolute dream because you have an economy that hasn't been slowing. You have the Federal Reserve on the precipice of about to start cutting interest rates. Earnings have been good. Now, granted, some of the technology earnings have disappointed, but should anybody be surprised? I mean, the bar has been set so high, you can only clear the high bar so often. Now, it is an Olympic season. I guess we'll see what happens at Paris.
If the economy had been on point for inflation over the last few years, people today could rightly say that things now cost 9% more than they did a few years ago. The point being that things always cost more, generally speaking. There's such a thing as a reduction in prices, but that's not good. If you draw the span long enough, things will always end up costing more. I wonder when the idea that things are more expensive now than they used to be isn't as meaningful as maybe it has been in the last couple of years.
You know, that's only tough because for each and every one of us, as Americans listening today, we see the world through our own set of lenses. And those lenses are developed by our own set of collective experiences. It's not what we read in the paper. It's just what we've experienced in our own personal ecosystem. So I don't think there's a way to cut it. But boy, isn't it interesting how perspective differs from individual to individual and how it differs depending on the length of time through which we're doing the measurement.
And I couldn't argue with you on that at all. Of course, everybody has their own personal experience, and that's the filter through which they view the world. But then if you were going to try and enact policies that made the world better for more people, would you order up a drastic change by the Fed or by the federal government in some way? Or are we right now at a point where maybe we should be on all of these metrics?
I think that we're at a point where we should be on all these metrics because while I'm incredibly disappointed that the Fed was so far beyond the curve of not recognizing how persistent, stubborn, and entrenched inflation was, you know, there's also too much fiscal spending that further increased the inflation.
Sure.
But I think today the Fed has done a good job. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I am, John. I'm defending. I think the Fed has done a good job of being patient, measured, and intentional, data-driven.
Right.
And I think if they continue to follow that data, they won't make the same mistake twice, meaning they're going to cut interest rates in advance of the slowdown that's going to occur in the months ahead. Yes. And that's why we get a cut in September and a cut in December.
But not in July, I've heard here on WGN Radio. And yet, if you did point to one mistake that somebody has made, and let's leave the Fed off the table, we heard what you said, but would it be that last batch of money that the federal government put into the economy? Was that really what has fueled a lot of these problems?
The truth is, history is eventually going to be written. History is not yet put into text. But when people look back at the CARES Act, I think people will defend the CARES Act. When people will look back at the American Rescue Plan, which was the second big package that came through, there were so many good components that uplifted Americans, but it might have actually been too much penicillin, too much antibiotics for an economy that was already starting to slowly reopen. And anytime there is more of something, that something becomes worth less. So I think it's just conjecture here, but history will ultimately look back at the ARP as being just a bit too much, even though it was founded in directional intentions.
Yeah, I get that. Dow's up again now. Dow took a beating, but it's having a good day today. What am I to make of all of this?
Well, here's what you make of last week and what you make about today's rally. I think the current pullback in stocks isn't being driven by some major macroeconomic concern. The pullback in stocks we just saw has been driven by a correction in an overextended tech sector that had some disappointing earnings. But at the end of the day, this is not an opportunity to make people say, oh my gosh, I got to do a bunch of de-risking, because as long as this statement remains true, John, if economic growth is stable, if the Fed is about to cut rates, and we have validation that inflation is declining, yeah, we are in a good spot. Everyone should continue to invest and just rebalance according to their financial plan.
Yeah, I was going to ask you where you think maybe we will be through the election. Cogitate on that for a minute. We're visiting with Craig Bolanos, co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Let's get you more business news right now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Catholic health system Ascension is selling most of its Illinois hospitals to a California company. The deal would reportedly put several big Chicago area hospitals under new ownership. Cranes reports Ascension is unloading 9 hospitals and 4 care sites to Prime Healthcare. The number of Ascension hospitals in Illinois would shrink to 5 from 14. The system has 10 facilities in the Chicago area. Those being sold are Ascension Resurrection, Ascension St. Mary, and St. Elizabeth in Chicago, Ascension Holy Family in Des Plaines, Ascension Mercy in Aurora, Ascension St. Francis in Evanston, Ascension St. Joseph in Joliet and Elgin, and Ascension St. Mary in Kankakee. Terms of the deal haven't been disclosed. Discover Financial Services and Capital One face a proposed class action lawsuit over their merger. The lawsuit claims the $35 billion deal will hurt competition and raise prices for consumers. The complaint also claims the merger will mean fewer and less valuable credit card benefits and higher fees. The lawsuit also claims the merger violates antitrust law. Riverwoods-based Discover and Capital One announced their merger back in February. It's also being scrutinized by the federal government. Capital One says the lawsuit has no merit. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And this is a pretty good time of year for many of our farmer friends.
You know, this is field day season, right? I mean, who doesn't want to be out in the field in the summertime looking at crops?
If that's your jam, Fred Belo is your guy.
Yep, I'm a professor of crop physiology in the University of Illinois.
And over the next month, the U of I Department of ACES is putting on a variety of Agronomy Days seminars, helping farmers do a better job of raising conventional and organic crops, managing bugs and fertilizer, and there's even one for farmers interested in adding solar panels to their land. August 1st is when Professor Belo is up to bat.
Dr. Connor Sybil and I are hosting our third annual crop physiology field day. And I know you're thinking about, well, what's crop physiology?
You are correct.
We study the products and practices that growers can do to get more corn and soybean yield. And the physiology is the why behind it all. You got to have an explanation for it.
He says the theme this year is got yield.
And then, of course, we have it. And if you don't have it, we're going to show you how you can get some of it. Farmer-friendly presentations that show our research that we're doing to try and help growers get that yield.
And there will be a panel discussion of growers who crank out way more than 300 bushels an acre.
And one confirmed participant is the Illinois National Corn Yield Champion. That's Troy Upoff.
What was his yield?
It's in the 360. It's a pretty good yield.
Well, the national average is about 180 bushels an acre. Illinois is a little higher, right?
See, that's what's known as the yield gap. The difference between the average yield and record yields. And, boy, we like to think of that gap as opportunity.
Okay, August 1st in Champaign. Be there if you want to pump up your corn yield.
And even if you're not a farmer, well, wouldn't it be nice to know something about those crops that you see from the road?
You can find out more by typing Agronomy Day into your Googler.
Thank you so much, sir.
You are welcome. And I'd like to thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. From the dairy farm to your belly, today's National Hot Fudge Sunday Day, and it's National Wine and Cheese Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Craig Bolanos, co-founder and CEO at Wealth Management Corporation, or Group rather, is with us. The website is investwithwmg.com. So what do you think about the markets through the election? Just in general, how are you anticipating them evolving the rest of the year?
Well, all I can say is history is going to be my guide because it's the only guide that I have, John. And 40 years of election data tells me that when we have the big one, and November's the big one, August, September, and October are chock full of VIX. That means volatility. Volatility is not bad. It just means I buckled my seatbelt. So I expect over the next 90 days, there's going to be a lot of pops. There's going to be a lot of drops. But I believe once the ballots are counted, as long as we don't have to send the election to SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, meaning we have clear and definitive winners, this market will firm and rally going into the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't want to think about the Supreme Court deciding this one. I expect it will be close, especially with Kamala Harris possibly at the top of the Democratic ticket. It seems to be getting closer. Terry Savage yesterday had a statistic that said over the last almost 100 years, if in the last 3 months before the election, the market trends up, it's either up or down over the last 3 months, then the incumbent wins if it's up and the incumbent loses if it's down, with hardly any exception. I still don't know if the sample size, because we only have elections every 4 years and there's a bunch of anomalies like a pandemic year, etc. I don't know if the sample size is sufficiently large for us to put a lot of stock in that, but I'm not the expert. What do you think about that 3-month trend?
You know, it makes sense to me, but so many Americans aren't even invested. And I think it actually comes down to something simpler, which is, you know, there's a gentleman, his name is James Carville, and what was he famous for saying?
It's quote, the economy.
It's the economy, stupid. And if the stock market is a reflection of the economy, then yes, I assume that would go ahead and play out and hold water. And I'm never going to disagree against Terry Savage. So I think it probably does hold some weight.
What do you think about some of the companies or sectors right now? Ford had a bad report. Tesla's down a lot. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, clearly you and I have talked about Tesla before on this business lunch, and we've learned that there's been this pushback from consumers about the viability of EV. I mean, clearly hybrid is the solution to cross us over this path as we get away from fossil fuels, and Tesla's just going to have to do a better job navigating it, as are the other companies. As far as Ford and others go, it comes back to what you and I have said on a couple of occasions. People no longer have the money in the bank. People have less money going into their savings. More of their money is being spent on staples. That's food, medicine, different things. That's less money to spend discretionary. People aren't volunteering to go ahead and get a new car, especially when no one's getting 0% financing. So it's just this point in time. It's not an indication of gloom and doom. It's just the reality of where we sit in July of 24.
Well, what's your crystal ball say about AI in general? Do you think that we have put too much stock in it, that AI is going to be there, but while it has lifted the market in a handful of companies the last year or two, maybe we have overvalued or estimated its worth? What do you think about that?
It hasn't been overestimated. I think AI is so incredibly transformative that once it starts being deployed properly through proper adoption, it is going to be accretive to corporate profits. I think, though, it's so incredibly transformative because AI is going to transform society as we know it. The cell phone did, the computer did, the internet did, and AI is just the next iteration. And I liken something that I've talked about before. Remember the gold rush back in the 1800s, John?
No.
The gold rush?
No.
It was the companies that sold the pyxes and the axes and the wheelbarrows who made all the money. That's somewhat analogous for the Fab Five, right? The companies that are powering AI. Are we putting too much stock in their share prices? Maybe. But your question was about AI, and is it real, and is it transformational, and will it be accretive to earnings long term? Well, the long answer and the short answer to both of those questions is yes.
Okay. Anything else? I got about 18 seconds you want us to know, Craig?
I think people should just this. Don't get tripped up on if this person wins or that person loses. It's good or bad for your portfolio. Make a plan, stick to your plan, fund your plan, and that's how everybody gets retired and stays retired.
Craig Bolanos joins us frequently on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the co-founder and CEO at Wealth Management Group. Thank you, Craig.
Great to be with you, John.